on VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Haiti's international airport was shut down after gangs opened fire at a commercial flight landing in Port-au-Prince. The shooting Monday prompted some airlines to temporarily suspend operations as the country swore in a new interim prime minister. Firefights between gangs and police broke out in other parts of Haiti's capital. Rounds of gunfire echoed through the streets as heavily armed officers ducked behind walls and civilians ran in terror. Haiti's prime minister was ousted after just 6 months in the role. Reuters correspondent Rachel Judah has more.
The country's transitional presidential council appointed entrepreneur and former Senate candidate Alix Didier Fils-Aimé to replace Gary Conille on Monday. The shakeup is the latest blow to political stability in the Caribbean nation, which is struggling through a severe security and humanitarian crisis. Armed gangs have gained control of most of the capital, Port-au-Prince, and have expanded to nearby regions, fueling hunger and forcing hundreds of thousands from their homes. Conille, who also briefly led the country over a decade ago, had been appointed in May in the hope of restoring stability. In a letter circulating on social media, Conille criticized the council, saying it only had the power to appoint a prime minister and not dismiss one. In recent weeks, Conille has embarked on trips abroad to the United Arab Emirates and Kenya to seek security assistance. Although the UN has authorized an international force to help Haiti's police take back control from the gangs, the mission has been poorly resourced and produced scant results. The UN's World Food Program said last month that the total number of displaced people in Haiti was now more than 700,000.
Reuters correspondent Rachel Judah. This is VOA News. The trial of a police volunteer accused of raping and murdering a doctor at an Indian government hospital began on Monday. Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo reports.
The murder sparked outrage and huge protests over the lack of safety for women in India. India's federal police said that the woman's body was found in a classroom at a hospital in Kolkata on August 9. Police volunteer Sanjay Roy was arrested for the crime, police said. Charges were drawn up last week. Roy said he was innocent and being framed, local media reported. The case has reignited criticism of India's poor record on women's safety, despite the introduction of tougher laws. It also shines a light on the poor infrastructure and security at government hospitals in India, many of which lack basic facilities, such as restrooms for doctors, CCTV cameras, and security personnel. India's federal police also arrested the officer in charge of the local police station and the superintendent of the hospital for allegedly tampering with evidence as well as financial irregularities.
Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo. An immigration hardliner who served as a White House aide under former U.S. President Donald Trump has been appointed to a new position in the new Trump administration. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Send the illegals back home.
Stephen Miller will be Donald Trump's deputy chief of policy. Miller was a central figure in previous policy decisions, including the separation of migrant children from their families in 2018. Campaigning with Trump in Colorado last month, Miller blamed the Democrats for an influx.
We don't need migrants consuming and depleting our public resources, overwhelming our public schools, overwhelming our hospitals, taking over our apartment buildings, and yes, murdering innocent Americans.
Since leaving the White House in 2021, Miller led the America First legal organization. I'm Jackie Quinn.
World War II veterans were honored on Monday at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
The Veterans Day event paid tribute to the more than 16 million men and women who served during World War II. Edward Towns, now 103 years old, was one of those being honored. He served in the U.S. Army. His three brothers also served in various branches of the military.
It means everything to me, you know. I enjoy being here and I enjoy being with them.
Some veterans in attendance received a Greatest Generation commemorative coin and were part of the Parade of Heroes with a wreath laying at the memorial's Freedom Wall. I'm Shelley Adler.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
It's a dire humanitarian situation in Gaza.
Global food security experts warn there is a, quote, strong likelihood that famine is imminent in areas of northern Gaza.
Human Rights Watch calls for peacekeepers to be sent to Sudan.
Getting a presence on the ground which could play a role to deter further attacks on civilians, to monitor humanitarian obstruction, for example, is absolutely critical.
And a new prime minister for Haiti.
The shakeup is the latest blow to political stability in the Caribbean nation, which is struggling through a severe security and humanitarian crisis.
Today is Tuesday, November 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish. The United States is set to decide whether Israel has made progress towards improving the humanitarian situation in Gaza. This just days after global food security experts warned that there is a strong likelihood famine is imminent. Zachary Goldman of Reuters has the story.
Trucks carrying humanitarian aid were allowed to cross into northern Gaza on Monday. The move comes just days after global food security experts warn there is a, quote, strong likelihood that famine is imminent in areas of northern Gaza. And it also comes as the United States makes a determination on whether Israel has made progress toward improving the humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said on Sunday that Washington will also decide how to respond. That's after President Joe Biden's administration told Israel in an October 13th letter to take steps within 30 days or risk restrictions on U.S. military aid. Israel has been focusing its campaign against Hamas militants in Gaza's north and center. The U.S. said it is watching to ensure that Israel's actions do not show it has a, quote, policy of starvation in the north, where the U.N. estimates between 75,000 and 95,000 people are still located. On Friday, the Independent Famine Review Committee said it could be, quote, assumed that starvation, malnutrition, and excess mortality due to malnutrition and disease are rapidly increasing in the north. The committee reviews findings by the internationally recognized standard known as the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC. The Israeli military agency that deals with Palestinian civilian affairs pushed back against the report. It said that, quote, all IPC projections had proven, quote, incorrect and inconsistent with the situation on the ground. Israel's military also continues to operate in accordance with international law, it said, to, quote, facilitate and ease the transfer of humanitarian aid to Gaza. Following the famine warning, the head of the United Nations Palestinian Relief Agency, UNRWA, accused Israel of using hunger as a weapon. UN data has also shown the amount of aid entering Gaza has fallen to its lowest level all year. Israel's UN ambassador told the Security Council last month that the issue in Gaza was not a lack of aid. He accused Hamas of hijacking the assistance. Hamas has repeatedly denied Israeli allegations that it was stealing aid and says Israel is to blame for shortages.
That's Zachary Goldman from Reuters reporting for us today. And in Africa, a prominent human rights group is calling for the deployment of peacekeepers in Sudan following a recent wave of attacks on civilians in Jazeera State. Human Rights Watch says the situation has become so grim that a mission is needed to protect the population. Mohamed Yusuf has the story.
According to a local pro-democracy group, the Wad Madani Resistance Committee, 169 people have been killed since the violence started in southeastern Jazeera State on October 20th. The attacks began after a commander for the Rapid Support Forces defected and joined the Sudanese army. Rights group report that in response, RSF forces entered villages and towns in the area where the commander was from and carried out targeted killings and abuse. Leticia Bada is a deputy director of Human Rights Watch Africa Division. Bada says the violations have added more problems for our population, reeling from more than 18 months of war.
Sudanese women's rights groups have been documenting cases of sexual violence against women and girls in these towns and villages. And we're talking here about over 30 towns and villages which have been attacked in recent weeks. And these attacks are ongoing. So it's led to massive displacement of the civilian population in an area where people had already fled to and from. So it's just adding to the layers of suffering.
The RSF has denied attacking communities in Jazeera State and accuses Sudanese forces of arming local communities. The RSF and Sudan's military have been at war since April of last year. Rival generals led the parties and are locked in a power struggle. Meantime, Human Rights Watch and other observers are calling for the deployment of peacekeepers to Jazeera and other parts of Sudan in hopes of protecting civilians. Again, Leticia Badar.
Getting a presence on the ground which could play a role to deter further attacks on civilians, to monitor humanitarian obstruction, for example, is absolutely critical. But they would also obviously play a role in bolstering efforts on the ground, local ceasefire efforts, efforts by the emergency response rooms to provide assistance. But right now, the problem is that what is happening at the local level cannot act alone.
Ahmed Hashi, a Horn of Africa political and security commentator, says troops are needed and strong action needs to be taken against the leaders of the warring groups.
There is a need to send at least 3,000 United Nations soldiers. There is a need to take the criminal generals to the International Criminal Court and issue a warrant for their arrest. It is important for the United Nations to put its foot down on conflicts because they are going to metastasize into a massive humanitarian catastrophe.
In a report issued last month, the Office of UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said it was shocked by the human rights violations often witnessed in Sudan's Western Darfur region being repeated in Al Jazeera area. The United Nations Security Council is slated to discuss the report on Sudan later this month. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Russian forces have launched a massive drone and missile attack across Ukraine on Monday, killing at least six and injuring dozens more. The ongoing threat prompted emergency power outages in several regions. For VOA, Anna Chernikova reports from Kyiv.
In the early hours of Monday, Russian forces conducted a massive drone and missile attack across Ukraine. The air raid alert was on across Ukraine for most of the night. Most of the drones that targeted Kyiv were destroyed on the outskirts of the city. However, the sound of the air defense was heard in some districts. The Mykolaiv, Zaporizhia, Kryvyi Rih and eastern regions of Ukraine were the main targets of the Russian attack. One of the Russian missiles hit a residential building in Kryvyi Rih in central Ukraine, injuring at least 11 people, including two children. One person was killed and 22 more injured, including five children in Zaporizhia. Zaporizhia resident Mykola told journalists the strike happened at around 1:30 a.m. when he and his family were asleep. The doors of their apartment were blown out. Mykola's wife was injured and hospitalized. His grandson got a head injury and underwent surgery. Five people were killed in Mykolaiv as a result of a drone attack. One private house was destroyed and several houses and a residential building were damaged. The heating and gas supply were cut in the city due to the damage caused by the blast wave. The repair works are ongoing. Mykolaiv resident Tatiana recalls she heard the sound of the approaching drone and then there was an explosion. The windows in her apartment were blown out. When the emergency workers arrived, they told the residents to immediately leave the building. She later told journalists her neighbor who was living on the fourth floor was killed, and the building's corner was completely destroyed. In addition, later in the morning, Russian forces launched eight Tu-95 bombers and a MiG-31 jet, which can carry Kinjal hypersonic missiles. Ukrainian air forces reported the missile launches, however, did not record any missiles in the Ukrainian airspace. Later, Ukrainian officials said the launches were probably simulated in order to destruct Ukrainian air defenses. All of this follows Ukraine's attack on the Moscow region of Russia with at least 34 drones, which is the biggest drone strike on the Russian capital since the beginning of the Russian full-scale invasion. The flights from Moscow's three biggest airports, Domodedovo, Sheremetyevo, and Zhukovsky, were diverted and at least five people were injured, Russian authorities reported. Over other regions of Western Russia, Russian air defense destroyed another 50 drones. Ukrainian general staff did not comment on the attack. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. Tens of thousands of Poles, including nationalist opposition chiefs, walked through Warsaw on Monday in an annual Independence Day event held by the far right. Marchers chanted "White Europe of Brotherly Nations" and "Stop the European Union." They carried banners reading "Stop Mass Migration" and "Stop Turning Poland into Ukraine." Japanese lawmakers voted on Monday for Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba to stay on as leader after his scandal-tarnished coalition lost its parliamentary majority in a lower house election last month. Amazon is developing smart eyeglasses for its delivery drivers to guide them to, around, and within buildings as it tries to smooth out the final stretch of an order's journey to a customer's home. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. President-elect Donald Trump is getting to work setting up his cabinet and team of White House staff and advisors. Alex Cohen of Reuters reports.
U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is continuing to put together his team to serve with him when he returns to the White House in January. He's expected to tap immigration advisor Stephen Miller as White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. And Trump confirmed that he chose Republican Representative Elise Stefanik to serve as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Miller's appointment is according to a CNN reporter's post on X Monday, which Vice President-elect J.D. Vance appeared to confirm in a separate post on the platform. Reuters could not independently verify this. It would place the architect of Trump's restrictive first-term immigration agenda in a top position. Miller was a White House senior advisor for policy during Trump's first term in office. He played a key role in policies including constructing a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border, banning people from certain Muslim-majority nations and elsewhere, and a contentious 2018 border policy that separated thousands of migrant families. Trump was elected to a second term after promising to deport record numbers of immigrants in the United States illegally. The president-elect called his U.N. ambassador pick Stefanik an incredibly strong, tough, and smart America First fighter in a statement shared with Reuters on Monday. The New York representative and House Republican conference chair has been a fierce Trump ally. The United Nations has been planning for Trump's return, as well as likely cuts to U.S. funding and engagement with the world body during his second term as president.
That's Reuters' Alex Cohen reporting for us. Meanwhile, across the country from Washington, Trump's supporters in California, the state that went for his opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris, have been celebrating Trump's presidential election victory. This comes, though, as the state's Democratic governor has called for a special legislative session to protect the state's progressive policies from a Trump presidency. VOA's Genia DeLute has the story.
Dozens of flags, tires, plates, even shoes. California retired U.S. Marine Jerry Piani carries Donald Trump's name on nearly everything he owns. Supporting Trump as an outsider from Washington's political elite, Piani has been advocating for the Republican candidate for the last 8 years.
What a relief it was off my chest, because without that, there's no other place to go. This is the last bastion we got. America's the only place we got to go. Where else can you go to have freedom like you have here and have a constitution? So this is very important for us.
Trump supporters in Los Angeles this past weekend celebrating the victory, filled with noise and flags, Griffith Park, Hollywood Boulevard, even Santa Monica Pier. California Republican couple Rebecca and Roland Casey have joy mixed with grief. They are mourning Roland's two nephews and a cousin who recently died from a fentanyl overdose.
And it's killing a lot of blacks. And not just blacks. But my family. That was three family members of mine that I love dearly, that I helped raise And then now they're not here anymore because of fentanyl coming from China to, through Mexico into the United States. We know that the borders, they must be shut down. And you have to have secure borders. If you don't have secure borders, you don't have a nation.
Rebecca Casey says they were hoping Trump would be elected in 2020.
It had to happen this way.
Yes.
You know, he was president for 4 years, and I really believe that a lot of things had to be exposed. The Lord allowed him just to take a sit down for only a minute, which he didn't stop even then. We're following him every step of the way.
California Governor Gavin Newsom last week asked the state's legislature to increase legal funding to defend California from potential Trump's White House attacks on abortion rights, electric vehicle regulations, immigration policies, and federal disaster aid. Michelle, another Trump supporter, who despite her candidate's victory did not want to give her last name, fearing it might affect her job in Hollywood entertainment, said she believes that more Californians might choose the Republican Party come next election cycle.
Once he gets into office, like really into office, I think so many people are going to just be living their best life.
In the 2020 presidential elections, 63.5% of Californians voted for Democratic nominee Joe Biden versus 34.3% for Trump. In 2024, Harris got 58.2% and Trump 38.9%. The last time a Republican presidential candidate won California was George H.W. Bush in 1988. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Turmoil in Haiti continues as the Transitional Presidential Council appoints a new prime minister. Reuters' Rachel Judah has more.
Haiti's prime minister has been ousted after just 6 months in the role. The country's Transitional Presidential Council appointed entrepreneur and former Senate candidate Alix Didier Fils-Aimé to replace Gary Conille on Monday. The shakeup is the latest blow to political stability in the Caribbean nation, which is struggling through a severe security and humanitarian crisis. Armed gangs have gained control of most of the capital, Port-au-Prince, and have expanded to nearby regions, fueling hunger and forcing hundreds of thousands from their homes. Conille, who also briefly led the country over a decade ago, had been appointed in May in the hope of restoring stability. In a letter circulating on social media, Conille criticized the council, saying it only had the power to appoint a prime minister and not to dismiss one. In recent weeks, Conille has embarked on trips abroad to the United Arab Emirates and Kenya to seek security assistance. Although the UN has authorized an international force to help Haiti's police take back control from the gangs, the mission has been poorly resourced and produced scant results. The UN's World Food Program said last month that the total number of displaced people in Haiti was now more than 700,000. WFP also said that roughly half the population, almost 5.5 million Haitians, are suffering from acute hunger, with pockets of famine-level hunger being reported among internally displaced people.
Rachel Judah of Reuters reporting. And now to South Asia. In Calcutta, India, the trial is underway of the man accused of brutally raping and killing a young doctor in August. It's a case that sparked nationwide outrage over the way women are treated. Alice Rizzo of Reuters has that story.
The trial of a police volunteer accused of raping and murdering a doctor at an Indian government hospital began on Monday. The murder sparked outrage and huge protests over the lack of safety for women in India. India's federal police said that the woman's body was found in a classroom at a hospital in Kolkata on August 9. Police volunteer Sanjay Roy was arrested for the crime, police said. Charges were drawn up last week. Roy said he was innocent and being framed, local media reported. The case has reignited criticism of India's poor record on women's safety, despite the introduction of tougher laws. It also shines a light on the poor infrastructure and security at government hospitals in India, many of which lack basic facilities, such as restrooms for doctors, CCTV cameras, and security personnel. Around 128 witnesses will be examined during the trial in West Bengal State, court sources told Reuters. Authorities are looking to fast-track the high-profile case, and hearings will take place daily. They will not be open to the public. One source, Speaking on condition of anonymity, said the father of the alleged victim gave evidence on Monday. India's federal police also arrested the officer in charge of the local police station and the superintendent of the hospital for allegedly tampering with evidence as well as financial irregularities.
Reuters' Alice Rizzo reporting for us. Back in the United States now, but it is a story connected to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Anna Wiebe moved to the United States from Ukraine 25 years ago. Four of her Ukrainian relatives fled the country and joined her after Russia invaded in 2022, and they settled in North Carolina. But then Hurricane Helene arrived. Rafael Sakov has the story, narrated for us by Anna Rice.
When we used to farm here, winter squash, basil, garlic, we had all kinds of things here. At some point, potatoes.
Ukrainian native Anna Wiebe has lived in North Carolina for over 20 years. After Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022, her mom, sister, and her sister's husband and son came to join her. But when the remnants of Hurricane Helene caused massive flooding in late September, Wiebe's Ukrainian family was among the over 100 North Carolinians killed.
So water was rising from here and there and from the side. They couldn't get out in the woods. We got back again here, and the water still was high, but I already could see that. Obviously, if they was here, I would be able to see the building or house. And I just got numb, and I was like, I don't see them. They're gone.
The trailer where they lived sat here on the banks of the South Tow River until flooding from Helene swept it away.
It was a flood zone, and it was raised up 5 feet up from the ground on a cement concrete blocks or whatever. And it was beautiful. It was a beautiful spot, nothing like what you see right now.
Search groups found the bodies of Anna's sister, 42-year-old Anastasia Navitny-Segin, and her husband Dmitro. Her 73-year-old mother Tatiana, who was sick and bedbound, as well as her 13-year-old nephew Evgeny, were never found.
What is sad to me is they escaped the Kherson in Ukraine, and they went through very hard time to get here. And a lot of people helped them to get here. And I just said I couldn't keep them safe here. Kind of like feel that probably my fault.
Wiebe's husband Ryan shot this video from her home's porch on September 27th at 8:54 a.m. The first floor of the family home got completely flooded. Windows got smashed. One of the walls gave way to water. As the family was trying to escape, Wiebe kept thinking about her relatives. At the time, there was already no cell connection. Today, she remembers how her mom had asked to be buried in Ukraine.
We were talking about that just recently because my mother was already on hospice and they asked those type of questions. And we come up with that she wanted to be cremated. Some part of it she wanted to be spread around here. Part of it to go back to Ukraine.
Wiebe hopes to fulfill that request after she processes her loss. The storm is estimated to have caused over $50 billion worth of damage across the state. The Wiebe family is hoping for help, but has started a GoFundMe page to help start rebuilding their home. The family has raised over $49,000, but none of that will bring back Anna's loved ones. For Rafael Saakov in North Carolina, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish.